My grandfather thinks this town is cursed. He says that all the bad things that happen in this town are because of one thing, an evil thing that feeds off the people of Derry.
But it can't be one thing. We all saw something different.
Maybe. Or maybe it knows what scares us most, and that's what we see.
I saw a leper. He was like a walking infection.
But you didn't. Because it isn't real. None of this is. None of this makes any sense. They're all like bad dreams.
I don't think so. I know the difference between a bad dream and real life, okay? We're all afraid of something.
Got that right.
Hi, Rich. What are you afraid of?
Clowns.
We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hello and welcome to Sordid Cinema, the flagship film podcast of SordidCinema.com. My name is Simon Howell. I'm joined as always by Mr. Ricky D.
Hello, Simon.
Also here, Patrick Murphy.
I am here. Hey, Simon. And Rick.
Woo! We're all here. The Losers Club, here once again. So, yeah, we've got a big one today. Something that people have been looking forward to for a long time, and that is, of course, the new version of Stephen King's It, directed by Andres Muschietti. Probably screwed up your name. Sorry, bro. With a whole host of writers and a huge development history and all kinds of other things to talk about. But first, a quick word about TIFF, because that started 2 days ago as of the time of this recording. I've got some stuff, some coverage to be drafted very shortly. We've got a few writers on deck. I'm seeing a whole bunch of movies that I'm actually really excited about, which I didn't think was going to happen this year. So, I don't know. I'm stoked.
Yeah, I think the movie I want to see the most at TIFF is Call Me By Your Name. I would put Aronofsky's film in second place. Lots of good stuff at TIFF this year, I think. Hopefully.
Yeah. Mother is out next Friday anyway, so we can talk about it basically while TIFF is happening. So I'm not too... It would be cool to see it at the fest, but it seems like the screenings are going to be like crazy sold out. I don't mind seeing it in a regular person theater. But it's going to be fun. There was I hadn't seen the most recent trailer for it until I sat down for it. It has this very schlocky 70s style trailer that was hilarious. About like, this movie will mess you up, which, all right, well, you'd better now.
Really? I didn't see that trailer.
Yeah, mine had that trailer too. I'm not sure. I mean, it was kind of a funny throwback, but I'm not sure how the audience will respond to something like that. I don't know that that'll convince people to go see it.
Dude, my audience was so confused watching it. Like, I got to talk about this during the review. But I want to ask you guys a quick question before we jump into the review. If you had to be one of those characters, or which character do you think you resemble the most in the movie It? Like, out of the kids, don't say Pennywise, please.
I don't know. I mean, this is something we should get into later, but there were so many kids that now I don't feel like I even remember them all.
See, I kind of feel like my favorite character in the movie is Eddie, and I'm going to talk about why when we reviewed a movie, but I would like to think that if I was one of the kids, I would be Eddie.
Because, well, which one was Eddie again?
Eddie's the hypochondriac. And you know what I mean. I'm always washing my hands. I'm always afraid I'm going to get sick. I don't like being near people because people have germs.
That is true.
So I try to stay away from people. Yeah. So I'm like Eddie. Minus a crazy mom, but yeah, still.
Eddie was the most entertaining kid, but yeah, I think I'd be Mike in this situation. Kind of sort of set back slightly from the group.
Which sort one was Mike again?
Observing. Exactly. Exactly, Simon. I don't want to be noticed.
We All right. Well, since we're already getting into it, we may as well get into it. I did want to mention, since you were talking about anticipating stuff at TIFF, I've got tickets for, I think, 10 movies, and I'm really, really excited for Arnaldo Iannucci's The Death of Stalin, which is getting raves from people mostly that I trust. I'm really excited for the, I think it's in Wavelengths, the documentary Kaniba from the folks who made Leviathan. It looks insane. I'm really looking forward to Zama, which is the new one by Lucretia Martel, who did The Headless Woman.
Oh my God, yeah. That movie is so good.
Yes, it really is. And I've heard very good things about this one as well. Again, from people I trust. So yeah, I'm actually, there's at least a half dozen that I'm like really, really stoked for, and a few others that I'm at least deeply curious about. Anyway, let's hear a clip from the new version of Stephen King's It right now.
Look, everywhere it happens, it's all connected by the sewers. And they all meet up at
the house on Newbold Street.
Source of the clown. I'm not doing this!
What the hell? Put the map back. What happened?
That was a clip from It, the new adaptation of Stephen King's novel from director Andres Muschietti, or possibly Muschietti, not sure which. Sorry, again. Anyway, fans of the book may remember that it is a combination coming-of-age story as well as, of course, a horror narrative set in the 50s. This film version has brought the events up to 1986 and 1987, I believe. Or, sorry, 88 and 89. And follows a motley gang of young boys and one girl as they take on a fearsome, phantasmagorical clown in the town of Derry, Indiana. Hijinks and gore ensue. Now, Ricky, I mean, this project's been in development for a really long time. I was just sort of going back over its history, as before we recorded. It's actually been in development for about a decade now. And everyone got real excited a few years ago because Cary Fukunaga, who was hot off of having just directed some of the key episodes of the first season of True Detective, was tipped to direct, and apparently he had developed this this really personal vision of what it should be, and then he got the boot, and Muschietti is here instead. So, I mean, it's tough to know, but do you feel like they made the right call?
I'm not sure. I mean, because I don't know what his vision was, but I like this movie. I like it a lot. I don't think it's great. I think it's got problems. I do not think it works too well as a horror film. And the thing is, it's like, I'm not entirely sure if it's my fault or... Okay, my fault isn't the right way to phrase this. I'm not entirely sure if it's because I'm familiar with the source material, be it both the book and the 1990 miniseries starring Tim Curry. And so when I'm watching the movie It, because I'm familiar with the original source material, it sort of deflates attention because I know what's going to happen in the next scene. I know if a kid is actually in danger, if he's going to survive till the very end. And for that reason, as a horror film, despite the fact that it does have some interesting visuals, mostly like the painting that comes to life and terrorizes the Jewish kid Stan, there are some moments, and I do, for the most part, like the aesthetics, like the visuals, the cinematography, the lighting especially. But it didn't really creep me out, and it didn't scare me. Now, most horror films don't scare me, but I do like to at least jump out of my seat, you know, be it even with, like, sound design. Like, usually it's a sound that makes people, like, freak out while watching a movie. So I went on opening night, Thursday night, 10 p.m. It was sold out. The 7 p.m. show was sold out, so I had to wait to watch a 10 p.m. show. And so, packed house, and I don't think people really responded well to the movie. Like, not too many people jumped. I was hoping for more of, sort of like the Fantasia atmosphere. When you walk in and people really react to the movie and they respond and they talk back to the screen and they jump and scream and yell. I didn't get that. Like, it kind of felt like I kind of felt like the girl behind me, I think she was bored. And I could swear that the guy next to me fell asleep. And that's not to say this is a bad movie. I do think it's a good movie. But what I like about the movie is I like the kids. I like the element of childhood friendship. It has like the hallmark of Stand By Me. And like Stand By Me is one of my favorite Stephen King adaptations, right? It's like such an amazing movie. I think what this movie has going for it is a great cast. And they all share such great chemistry. I think they all do fantastic in their roles. There's a lot of kids, so clearly you're not going to get to know each and every single kid because the movie's already 2 hours and 50 minutes long. And there's like 7 kids to follow around, right? But overall, like, I guess to answer your question, Simon, it's like, I don't know because they, I guess, still wanted to be faithful to the original source material, and maybe he wanted to do something completely different, which might have been more interesting, to be honest, to be fair. When you think of the book, I don't know if you've read the book.
But a long, long time ago.
Okay, there's a few moments that really stick with you, like a few things that you really remember. One of those moments is the scene in which, is it Bill? Bill, right?
Yeah.
Bill, yeah.
He's looking through old photographs. And in the book, that's when the pictures sort of come to life. In this movie, they change it, and it's by far the best scene in the film. So the kids are, I think they're like in a basement or in an attic, and
they're in a garage.
They're in a garage, yeah. And they have the projector, and they're projecting these old photographs of him and his family, and you get to see Georgie. And that's when Pennywise comes out of the screen. And
Pennywise.
The way it was orchestrated and shot and filmed, and I guess the CGI, I thought that was amazing. I wish we had more scenes like that. That scene actually terrified me. That was one scene in which the audience actually reacted and responded, and a few people jumped out of their seat. A few girls screamed. I loved even just like the reactions from the boys. Like that was to me, that was the highlight of the film. I'm actually writing an article specifically about that one scene. And that's something that they actually changed from the book. The idea is still there. Like, they're still getting the idea across to the audience. And it's similar to what we have in the book. But they do change it. And I like it when the writer and the director, the filmmakers, actually take the original source material and they sort of like add their own little twist to it. So it doesn't change the actual story, it doesn't change the outcome, it doesn't change the characters, but little things like that go a long way at the end of the day.
Patrick, how about you? I mean, I don't know what your attachment is to Stephen King or It or the original miniseries or, you know, 80s coming of age films or, you know, things like this, but I don't know. As our resident screenplay nitpicker, how do you feel like they handled the art of adaptation here?
I feel like I'm a resident movie nitpicker. I don't really have any attachment to Stephen King other than through his movies or the movies made on his work, many of which are mediocre, some of which are outstanding. But I couldn't really tell you whether it's faithful or not. And truth be told, I don't really care. But I think it's a good movie. I liked it as a movie. And some of the problems that Rick may have had as far as not feeling tension, I did see the miniseries back in the day. It has been a long time, though. I didn't just recently rewatch it. And sometimes during the movie, I was wondering, where is this part? I could vaguely recall things. That miniseries did leave an impression on me. I was a kid when I saw it, and it was terrifying, though it might be kind of corny now.
It's not bad. I watched it again recently, last week.
I was traumatized by that that movie.
Well, it's because Tim Curry's fantastic.
Well, I think yes, a lot of us were traumatized just by the poster, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. I can remember specific images for that. So a lot of time during this movie, I was wondering, where are the adult portions of this? I remember there were adult portions, but anyway, we can get to that later. I really liked this. I thought it worked well as a throwback to 80s horror movies in a way, and it did really remind me of my childhood watching the miniseries, if that makes any sense. Yeah, I got a real sense of nostalgia from this movie. It kind of combines 80s Spielberg with sort of a Sam Raimi light direction.
Katrina messaged me on Twitter and she asked if she should see the movie and or read the book. And I told her the best way to describe this film is to imagine the original Nightmare on Elm Street mixed with Stranger Things.
And that works. I mean, definitely Stranger Things, of course. You can't help but think of it now since that show's been out. This is, by the way, I think far superior to anything Stranger Things did. It nails the 80s, what the 80s actually looked like and felt like, way better than Stranger Things. Stranger Things is a very hyper-stylized view of that. This is a far more realistic, I guess, view, or at least what my mind tells me was realistic, because I was those kids' age in 1988. Like, that was exactly where I was. I was 10 years old at that point. So that's exactly how I remember the 80s looking and feeling. Granted, who knows if my memory is accurate, but for me, it just felt right. And it felt like it was shot by Spielberg in the 80s, in many cases, especially the outdoor scenes. Some of the indoor stuff was a little bit different, but and certainly some of the violence didn't quite have a Spielberg tone so much as, I don't know, the Sam Raimi thing I'm getting from some of the camera movements. Obviously, there was a lot of jerky camera shots, kind of him trying to do some sort of hyperkinetic things with a camera that reminded me of Raimi, and of course a geyser of blood in a particular scene that I could not help thinking of Evil Dead 2. But yeah, I really liked it. It gets a little slow towards the end, and I think they made one crucial mistake with a certain character, with the character of Beverly in the end. I don't know why they did this, because from what I understand, just from looking things up and trying to sort of remember the original story and even looking at the book story, Beverly is turned into sort of a damsel in distress, and I didn't like that when I was watching it because it didn't feel right. And so, and then when I looked it up later, like, that's not the case in the book. I don't know why the screenwriters decided to go with that option. She gets kidnapped in the end. I guess I'm going to do spoilers now. Mm-hmm. It's spoilers for an old book.
You're totally right, and that is why I think Eddie is the best character in a movie, because Will is like the centerpiece. He's, I guess you can say, quote unquote, the star of the film. Beverly would be in second place. Like, in terms of, like, if you had, I don't remember how the credits rolled, but I'm assuming she would be in like second place, right?
Yeah, she was a heavily focused on character. She got a lot of screen time and depth to her character, but then they just kind of betray that at the end.
Exactly. And whereas with Eddie, he's sort of like, you see that character grow throughout the whole entire film, right up until the very end when he gets puked on, which could not stop laughing at that scene. Richie, to some extent, also, but I completely agree with you. Like, I think they betrayed her character. And the problem with Will is, I understand he's a centerpiece, but he's also the most boring character in this movie.
Yes, that's exactly right. Like, Bill is just, he does have kind of an arc, I guess, with his Georgie thing. But I will want to say this before Simon chimes in, though. I was going to say, like, your problem with being too familiar with the source material, because I had just sort of hazy memories of everything, I sort of knew where the story was going, and I knew about the adult portion later on, but I didn't specifically remember if all the kids would survive. So for me, those scenes really did work. Like, every time one of those kids was in one of those visions, I honestly didn't know, is this kid going to make it? Other than, of course, like, Bill and, you know, and Beverly, I knew that they were going to make it. But, you know, with Eddie's scene outside the house, I kind of thought he was going to get it right there.
So did I. And again, that's why I think he's the best character, because that was the one and only scene in which I thought the character was going to die. So I felt the tension and the suspense. And quickly, before Simon cuts in, my problem, I think, is that I watched the original 1990 TV miniseries 2 days prior to watching this movie. And I also watched the entire first season of Stranger Things right before watching this movie.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, if you'd just seen the movie, then yeah, you're pretty much going to be clued in.
We're kind of dancing around the fact also that this movie shares a cast member with Stranger Things.
Right, Richie. Yeah. Who's exactly. Out? He's actually really good in the movie. He's hilarious.
Yeah, and he's different from his Stranger Things character. He's not quite. He's definitely more smart alecky.
Well, he swears more.
Yes, he does. By the way, the kids swearing in this is the best I've heard of kids. So the most entertaining kids have sworn in a movie in quite some time. I got a big kick out of every time a kid said, holy shit, or what the fuck. That was the best.
So I had extremely mixed feelings about this movie. I will say that my audience had a much more positive reception to it than it sounds like Rick's did. It was a packed house. I saw it last night, Friday night, technically, I guess Thursday was opening night, but this was pretty damn close. There were some key moments that the audience like, it was almost a Fantasia level of audience engagement. Like, there was even applause at the end. There were some moments where actually there were audible groans, particularly the, shall we say, the awoken by a prince's kiss sequence at the end, which terrible. Was fucking awful. The audience could not believe that that had just happened, honestly. I don't know if that happened to anyone else's screening, but everyone was just like, no. Anyway, it was actually quite funny. But I think everything that involved the kids swearing was great. Most of the humor really landed, and I think that a lot of that is chalked up to the child acting. Some of the individual scare set pieces were good. I just felt like the movie really played it safe, I thought, in terms of like what an It movie would look like in 2017. Part of my issue is like, am I the only one who's fed up with the 80s? Like, I feel like I've seen enough of the 80s recently. It's not just, you know, Stranger Things, just this whole, like, I don't know, 80s aesthetic. I feel like I'm kind of done with it. I do appreciate that the movie did not go overboard in terms of, like, 80s references. You know, we do get the film billboards and we get The Cure and XTC, but it wasn't, like, wall-to-wall 80s pop songs, which I did appreciate. That would have been, like, really nauseating, but updating the story from the 50s to the 80s made it feel a little bit more contemporary in a way that was kind of boring to me, and having a Stranger Things cast member did not help. The writing to me was really all over the place in terms of the actual comic dialogue was great. Like I said, everything with the kids swearing and just, you know, giving each other shit was great. But man, most of the serious dialogue was terrible. Anytime anyone stops in the movie to give like a rousing speech, it's the worst, just the worst in terms of performance and writing. I guess my biggest problem with the movie is that it just had no chill. Like I wanted to spend more time getting to know these kids in between this. There had to be like something like 20 or 25 major sort of like scary set pieces. It's just wall to wall. Like you'll get sequences of like five sequences in a row of like finding out what a kid is scared of, and like it really dulled the impact after a while. And the score is very overbearing. The CGI is very in your face, and some of the effects are very, very iffy, especially for a movie that did not have, you know, an inconsiderable budget. I don't know. There were individual moments that really worked, but I don't know. It felt very unfocused. It felt simultaneously both over and under ambitious. I think the movie could have been way improved by cutting out at least two of the kid characters. There's just not enough time to get to know them and therefore care about them. The only other thing I'm going to say right now is that my thought going into this was, are they going to have the stones to do the preteen orgy sequence? Because the miniseries didn't. And if anyone doesn't remember what I'm talking about, in the original book, after they quote-unquote defeat Pennywise, in order to forge greater unity between everyone, Beverly has sex with each and every single one of the boys.
Well, that's because they can't get out, though. It's because they can't get out. And so they spend a day walking around. Mike actually wrote an article about it on our website right now.
Okay, I hadn't seen that.
Sorry, yet. Not right now. The article is published and it's on our website, so you can read it.
Right. Anyway, I was wondering if they were going to have the stones to do that. I can't decide whether I'm relieved that they didn't or not, but it would have been ballsy.
I think it's kind of odd. I've heard a lot of people talking about that scene. I had never read the book, so I don't know anything about the scene, but I'm finding all the reactions to that scene kind of curious, and how people say that it's completely unfilmable and that it is no. I don't know whether it has any thematic significance in the book. I feel like that would be a super easy scene to actually get across, though. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't be doing kiddie porn. You would just... You wouldn't be showing anything, but you could still imply that what has happened. We've seen so much stuff like on child abuse and much, much sicker things. Like, it's interesting to me that like nobody has a problem watching people get raped in movies. And yet at the same time, like, I mean, in this movie, they're clearly not 11, which apparently they were in the book. They're obviously more like 12, 13. I don't know. It wouldn't have come across as, it would have been kind of maybe a little weird and uncomfortable, but how many movies have much, much more uncomfortable things happen in them, and nobody talks about that.
I was more uncomfortable with her being kidnapped and then woken up by a kiss than I would have been with the child orgy. But maybe that says more about me than the movie.
And they certainly heavily imply some stuff with her dad that's sick and twisted. Like,
oh, more than implied.
Yeah, exactly. So why would... I mean, that to me is more disturbing and icky than, I don't know, six kids of the same age doing
All I want at the movies is more consensual sex between children. That's all
I am not endorsing that scene. I'm just saying I don't think it's unfilmable or anything.
Well, but the thing about the book is, in terms of, like, she being sexually molested by her dad, it's very subtle. Like, it's there, but they don't straight out come out and say it. Whereas in this movie, they really, really imply to hammer it in that she is being sexually molested by her dad. But in the book, like, that specific scene when they do have an orgy, it's because they can't escape, and it's because they're still children. So in the book, the idea is that they have to become quote-unquote adults because Pennywise feeds on the fear of children. So by actually having sex, they sort of, like, cross into adulthood. But the thing is, like, Simon, you're right when you say that there's just way too many scenes of watching each kid being terrorized by Pennywise throughout the whole entire film, one by one by one by one. And that's where I draw in the comparison to Nightmare on Elm Street. But Nightmare on Elm Street is a superior film. It's, like, one of the greatest horror films ever made, like the original one by Wes Craven. In that film, for most of the film, you follow around Nancy. And it's her point of view. It's her dreams. It's her nightmares. Yes, you do see Johnny Depp and a few characters here and there get, like, killed. But they have one specific scene in that movie, I'm sure you guys remember this, when Nancy and her friends all talk about the nightmares they are having. So instead of, like, Wes Craven showing each and every single one of their nightmares and how they are terrorized by Freddy Krueger, they just sort of, like, wrap it all up in one specific scene and focus on Nancy. And that is why the film is so much better than It, because you're focused on this one character. And Nancy is one of the most beloved characters of any horror film. Like, she's got this amazing arc. She comes back in part 3, again in part 7. You know, like, she's, like, one of the greatest, like, final girls in any horror film, period. This movie doesn't necessarily have that. They also drop the ball once again on Beverly's character. Will's completely boring, and he's the centerpiece. If I had written this movie and adapted the book, I would have actually made Beverly the centerpiece.
I thought you were going to say Eddie.
Oh, no. I think Eddie works as a supporting player. I think he's fine the way he is. But I would have made her the centerpiece, and they sort of try to do it to some degree, and I kind of wonder, like, because there's three screenplay writers, right? And I'm kind of curious to know exactly what made it into the final cut that's based on Cary Fukunaga's original vision, because he's still credited as a screenplay writer. So I'm wondering, like, I'm curious to know what exactly his personal quote-unquote vision is for the movie that he wanted to make. See, I think the reason why I like the book, the original 1990 miniseries, and this movie to some degree is because, like, Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my favorite films. And I like this idea of having this monster that feeds on your fear. And each and every single time he appears has something that you're terrified of. Now, like, in the book, and I think in a 1990 TV series, you get the werewolf. You don't get the werewolf here, which is kind of, like, that's a good change they made, because I think the werewolf would come across as cheesy nowadays in 2017. But the painting that comes to life was terrifying. Like, that's a great image. That's a horrifying image.
Yeah, so, like, that's a good example of, okay, I get what you're saying about, you know, having the one character to focus on, but this is a weirdly structured movie with all of its, you know, it basically just goes from one thing to the next, like one scare moment.
It's very episodic, yeah.
Yeah, it's very strange, and I'll agree with you to a certain extent that you do get desensitized to it after a while, but see, Rick, I found those to be, that was their way of developing character, right? So I did get an attachment to each kid based on their fears. Like, watching Stan go into his house, and look at that painting, it brought me back to childhood and all the weird things that I was afraid of as a kid. You know, watching a kid go down to the cellar, watching Stan look at that painting and be terrified by it. Or Eddie, the way his fear of disease, like the leper that comes after him. It really did actually get me closer to those kids, and it made me remember kind of all the stuff. Because I had a very overactive imagination when I was a kid. I mean, I was the kind of guy that when the lights went off, I thought my stuffed animals were moving in the dark, you know?
See, they should have gone full meta and had a scene where one of the kids sees the poster for the miniseries and then gets freaked out, and then the poster comes to life.
Okay, that would have been actually really, really cool. But yeah, I sort of liked it and didn't like it. I understand, like, I was sort of desensitized as well, but at the same time, it did bring me closer to them as a group, and I really, really do like their interactions as a group.
Okay, so here's the thing. When it comes to Mike, I agree with you. Like, I thought that his visions really fleshed out the character. Like, it told us a lot about the character. Get the scene. Well, yeah, with his character, I really do think so. Because the thing is, when he gets the first vision and he's in the alley and he's about to enter a butcher shop and he almost gets run over, that sort of clues you in into what happened to him and his family in the past. Like, you don't really know yet, but you find out later in conversation. With him, yes. With other characters, not really. But here's the thing. I'm gonna rave about Jack Dylan Grazer here, who plays Eddie, because he's amazing. So with Eddie, like my boy, okay. So you get to know more about him being a hypochondriac just with his witty dialogue. Like, the way he just won't shut up about, like, how you can get so-and-so disease by doing so-and-so thing throughout the whole entire film. We get to know that about him before we ever even see his vision of, like, whatever that thing was, the monster mucus thing that came to life and, like,
leper
on him. Yeah, exactly.
A leper, yeah.
I think we're on the same page. I think it works better to some degree with some characters, but I think because there's seven characters and because we get scene after scene after scene, and for me personally, because I know that all of these kids are going to survive, I just never really felt scared or...
See, I think my problem was, like, for most of these characters, what they are ended up being boiled down to, like, one, if generous, two sort of defining characteristics or defining fears, and beyond that, they didn't really have much going on. Like, especially Mike, as you mentioned, the black kid, like, doesn't feel like he wants to kill animals and is traumatized from a childhood memory. That's pretty much it. And he also has, like, maybe the least screen time of anyone. And then what's the name of the Jewish kid? Stan.
Oh my God,
Stan,
he's the worst.
He's extremely under, like, literally his character is defined by his Jewishness and basically nothing else, which is really bad and really lazy.
It's so true. Like, he was the worst written character in the movie. I'm not saying that the kid was bad, like, his performance was fine for what he was given to do, but his character, that was lazy writing. And the thing is, like, he actually had the most nightmarish vision. I think that painting coming to life was, like, the creepiest thing about the movie. But unfortunately, his character was just... it was just there. He was just a Jewish kid. That's all he was.
Well, and as, like, they had an actually interesting, there was a potential for something interesting there of, like, you know, he's sort of not paying much attention to his studies and his religion, which he's being raised in. And there's sort of an implication of there's this imposition on his life of these, you know, of these religious forces and these rituals that he's uncomfortable with. And I feel like there was something there that they could have mined for, like, a really interesting set of fears, but the movie never quite makes that connection, and it's just, it leaves the character feeling very empty.
Well, it's a rite of passage thing, right? So obviously the it is all about going from childhood to adult, and that's what he was studying for his bar mitzvah. And again, with Mike, like, the being able to shoot a sheep in the head apparently is what turns you from a boy into a man. So
obviously.
I mean,
he
I think
grew
a
up
lot
in
of
Nova Scotia, obviously.
They had those two characters in particular had that going for them. I mean, you're right that he was basically defined by his Jewishness, and they sort of exploited the bar mitzvah process for some cheap thematic content. But I mean, that's the only explanation I can give for why it's there, why they sort of focus on that a tiny little bit. Because
well, I mean, if you think about, like, if you think about the coming of age movies that this movie is riffing on / trying to emulate, none of them have this many kids. Like, how many kids are in Stand By Me? Four? Maybe five?
Well, you got the bad gang, I guess you could say.
Right, they don't really count. And by the way,
Sutherland gets some screen time.
Yeah, and by the way, the extent to which the lead bully in this movie is riffing on Kiefer Sutherland in Stand By Me is almost criminal.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about Henry at all, like, in his role in this, because from what I understand, that's I remember him from the TV miniseries as an adult, so I don't know how they're going to pull that one off in this, but... he was definitely he was underwritten for sure as a secondary villain. It didn't quite work. He just never quite worked. They never got the bully thing right. How the monsters in real life compared to the monsters under the ground, sort of thing.
Right. I mean, the bullies are so over the top, including the scene where Beverly has her own bullies, like, early in the film. The bullies are just so over the top that, like, it's sort of like the Jack Nicholson in the Shining problem, where everyone already seems psychotic, so it's not that much of a leap when they go full psycho.
And Rick, you've read, right? Isn't that how it is?
In the book, it's, like, really brutal. Like, when he carves him up with the knife, and actually, when I was watching the movie It, like I said, I just watched a 1990 miniseries like a few days prior, and the scene in which he whips out his knife and he carves what's his face's like belly, and then he falls back and rolls down the hill. That entire scene is like shot by shot almost identical to the 1990 version, to the point where I actually think that they filmed at the exact same location. The book is really hardcore, like big time. The thing about the book, and I guess even the movie, is that like it's like there's so many things going on here, but each and every single one of these characters is abused in a different way. You know, you have Beverly, who's sexually molested by her dad. Even Henry, he's abused by his dad. So they all suffer from like some sort of like abuse and neglect, and they're all outsiders, and they're all sort of like different, but they all share this one thing in common. And like the thing about this movie, like no different than, say, again, going back to Nightmare on Elm Street, is that the real monsters isn't really like Freddy Krueger and or Pennywise. It's the actual people in the town. And one thing I think that this movie does better than the 1990 miniseries is I think it does a better job in at least trying to establish the town itself as a character. Because there are specific scenes, like when they're standing in the middle of like town square, and there's I don't know what's going on in the background, like some kind of like fair, and there's a bunch of clowns in the background. Like there's specific locations that they actually visit, like the butcher shop. They talk about the well. They talk about the tunnels. They talk about the history of the town. There's a scene in a library, which we get a library scene, guys. He's not on the internet surfing the internet for information, which was like that's one of the reasons why I do like the fact that it takes place in the past. It is weird. It is weird. And I understand why. I think they figured that they would just make more money if it's set in the 80s, because the 80s is like hot right now.
Well, they set the chapter 2 in the present day.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Right. But it would have been cool if it was set in the 50s.
Then yeah, they would have had to set the adult version in the 80s. They would have been doing two period
pieces. Would have been fine. Yeah. I mean, this is another, like, again, I think you're right. They do a fine job of sort of building Derry as a location. The fact that we get all those shots of the town map helps as well, but then like that whole thing with Ben sort of becoming the town expert, like I didn't really understand. Like I understand that he had time on his hands and he was hiding away from bullies, but like why did he care about the town so much? Like why did he have this like Zodiac killer like insane True Detective style like setup in his room where he had like all these like what was his tie to the investigation? Why did he care so much? That was never established, and it was like another like big screenplay gap for me.
That's because that was a complete character switch. It was supposed to be Mike who is the one archiving like the history of the town, because he ends up becoming the librarian in the town. And they just, I don't know why they switched it to Ben. That makes no, I guess it was so that Ben could have something, right? Like you were talking about, everybody's boiled down to a character trait. Well, that was going to be Ben's, and that he's, you know,
and they didn't want him to just be the fat one.
The yeah, I guess. Right. I mean,
he could have been the NKOTB fan. I mean, that would have been good enough for me. I was like, you know what? This gives us a reason to finally play New Kids on a Block on this podcast.
Oh no.
You've been waiting.
I still have my New Kids on a Block CD. I actually want to take a picture and put it on Twitter. Yeah, I still have the CD. I think we all like this movie, though. Like, clearly we can nitpick and complain about certain things, specifically with the actual script. But overall, like, I think as a director, I think he did a really good job. I think the visual effects team did a really good job. Because, you know, there's a lot of CGI, and it didn't really bug me. I'm not fond of the ending, though. And then, like, I do like the fact that they actually split this into two chapters, so we're going to get the adult version in the next movie. I thought that was really, really smart, because the book itself is over 1,200 pages. And so you don't want to take 1,200 pages and shove it into, like, one movie that's 2 hours long, because it's going to be a hot mess. So that was smart.
You know what's interesting, though, is the book, from what I understand, and the TV miniseries, as I was watching this one, I was like, it jumped back and forth between time, because those two stories are supposed to parallel in some way, right? Like the adult version sort of parallels the kids version. So we are losing that a little bit.
We are, but again, I would prefer to have a different sort of adaptation, because we already have the 1990 miniseries. And so the thing is, like, again, like the 1990 miniseries starring Tim Curry, there's a lot to still like about that movie. We'll call it a movie. But it's like really dated in like the worst ways possible at times. And the interesting thing, though, is that I actually prefer the climax in that version than I do the climax in this movie.
Well, yeah, it's a very different sort of, from what I remember of the original miniseries. This is a much more effects heavy climax, and obviously there's been some.
Well, the effects are pretty heavy for the time in the 1990 version. They're kind of like corny and dated, but I like it has this like this charm to it.
Right.
But the thing about this is it felt way too much like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or had that Spielberg touch. Like, it was a little too polished for me. Like, I thought it should have been a lot more. I thought it should have been messy and sloppy and like the way they just like walk into like the way when they arrive at the well and the kids are just floating midair, like I don't know. It's not terrible. It's well done. I just don't necessarily.
It wasn't very creepy. It was more. Bland. Yeah.
Exactly.
The whole end. I'd say the whole last 20 minutes is pretty bland. It does not live up to the rest of the movie.
No, I would agree. And also I was curious about how they were going to leave it off in terms of making clear that there was going to be a part two. And again, audience reaction was interesting when that chapter two, when that chapter one title came up. But
you should have been sitting with me watching this movie because the two girls behind me, they were hilarious. Like, clearly they've never read the book. I don't think they even know who Stephen King is. They had no idea that this movie was split into two parts. So when the movie ended, they're like, so right before they said chapter one, they're like, there's no way. She was like, there's no way they're going to make a sequel to this stupid movie. And then chapter one pops up. She's like, oh my God, I see. I was so right. I was like, oh my God, lady, amazing. You're driving me nuts.
You were talking about the look of the film, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I think a lot of the credit for how good the movie looks has to go to Chung Hoon Chung, who's the DP who also, he's the regular guy for Park Chan-wook. So yeah,
this movie looks gorgeous. I loved how this movie was shot. This is one of my favorite movies so far I've seen this year for the look. It was a gorgeous movie to look at, and that got me through even some of the slower parts.
And that the fact that, you know, the cinematography was so gorgeous, I think made the fact that some of the effects were pretty dodgy like more upsetting to me, to be honest.
Okay. I was able to roll with them a little because, you know, I was okay with some funkiness to the movie. I mean, overall, I really did enjoy this. I liked it quite a bit.
I think for me, it was just like some of the detail work really pulled me out. Like in that opening sequence where, you know, we see Richie's death, when Pennywise when Georgie makes his entrance and then exit, it's the first time we see Pennywise played by Bill Skarsgård, who we haven't talked about yet. And it's so much of it is so good that it's disappointing when you notice, for instance, that CGI gleam they put on his eyes to make sure that he pops out in the dark. Things like that just really took me out of it. But maybe I'm just too nitpicky about these things.
Okay, wait. Bill Skarsgård, is his dad Alexander? Is that his son? Or Stellan. I'm so confused.
Stellan is his dad.
Stellan's not his son.
No, Bill's a little younger than Stellan.
I get all the Skarsgårds and the Sarsgårds.
Oh my God. So there's Alexander, Bill, and Stellan. And this is Bill.
I believe this is Stellan's son, and yeah.
Wait, Stellan's son is playing Pennywise?
I believe that's
the case. He is the son. I'm looking at it right now. He's the son of Stellan Skarsgård.
So confusing. All right, I did have something else I wanted to say, and I can't remember now. And it was kind of important.
I liked, you know, he was good as Pennywise. I think they overuse Pennywise a little bit too much in this movie, but just a bit, because he doesn't quite have the impact. Too many shots of Pennywise, you know, coming frenetically at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But conversations. His voice was so weird. I kind of liked the up and down. He was definitely not going for the nice Pennywise who's tricking people into thinking that he's a nice little clown. I mean, I remember the TV miniseries. He actually performed tricks and stuff like that. Tim Curry was great in that role. But I liked his voice. I wanted to hear more conversations with him.
Yeah.
Really? Not me. He terrified me. But so apart from the scene with the projector, I think my second favorite scene is the washroom scene, which once again reminds me of Nightmare on Elm Street when the blood just explodes.
Yeah, that was Evil Dead for me. Right in the face, man.
By the way, guys, if you're going to cut off that much hair, don't do it over the sink. Come on. That's how you get blood everywhere.
I was going to clog the sink.
I loved that shot of the hair pulling her into the sink, like the point of view or from, you know, down the pipe. There was some creative stuff in here that gave me, again, that sort of Sam Raimi vibe with the hair kind of latching onto her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to like here. I personally highly recommend the movie. Like,
I don't know. I didn't hate the movie by any means, but I can't. I don't know. It's one of those films that nagged me for how, with not a lot of effort, it could have been so much better. I think it's, you know, movies that have that potential and have room to improve are sort of frustrating in a unique way. I certainly didn't hate it. I was entertained, which is saying something for a movie that is clearly at least 15 minutes too long. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I enjoyed it, and I'm glad that, you know, I guess it's going to be a franchise since there'll be a sequel, but, like, you know, a relatively non-franchisey movie that comes from, like, an older property that is, like, a hard R and, like, an actual mid-budget horror film. It's nice to see, like, something kind of unusual that's clearly going to make a shit ton of money, as other people pointed out, but I don't know. It was fine, and it would have been nice if it was better than fine.
But the thing about it, like the book, the movie, the miniseries, is the reason why it has universal appeal. It's because the movie itself, like the story, just deals with ordinary fears that everyone has as children. And that's why I think it works. Like, it works, like, just about everyone can watch this movie and sort of relate to a character. Yes, we can sit here and talk about how they could have done the movie better, but overall, I think it's, like, one of the better Stephen King adaptations. Like, it's no Carrie, it's not Christine, it's not The Shining, it's not Shawshank. There's a lot.
It's not even The Mist.
It's not even The Mist, yeah. There's a ton of great big screen adaptations of Stephen King books. But overall, it's a pretty good movie. And so the thing is, the last thing I'm going to say is, I've already mentioned my two favorite scenes, but I think the two best scenes, and there's a difference, the two best scenes are actually, number one, the opening sequence. Because mm-hmm. you actually get to see the bond between Will and Bill and Georgie. And I thought that was, like, a beautiful scene. Like, as corny as that sounds, it was a beautifully shot scene. I liked the way the two characters just, like, interacted with each other. It was just, like, it was really refreshing to see that in, like, a horror movie nowadays in 2017. The second scene, probably the best scene in the movie, was the scene in which they go swimming, which was really odd, strangely beautiful, because they just sort of, like, strip down to their underwear. And by the way, those kids need to buy new boxers. But anyways,
so they're wearing like tighty whities, man.
Yeah,
that was 80s all the way.
Totally. And then Beverly shows up and she strips down and they go swimming. And I thought that was, again, such a beautiful scene, because it's very rare you see moments like that in horror movies these days, especially if they're coming out of Hollywood. So those were the two best scenes. And once again, I think you said this, Simon, and I will agree. I could have used a bit more of the coming of age element of this film, a bit more of these characters getting to know them, and a little less of the scares and gotcha moments.
Yeah. I'll wrap up by just saying, like, I think honestly the reason that it is such an enduring story is because clowns are fucking scary. All right. And people like to be scared, and people find clowns scary. And there aren't a lot of scary clown movies. And I think, frankly, most people and most audiences are going to be very happy with this film because, A, it contains a scary clown, and B, the scary clown is in it a lot. So I really think that's as simple as it is.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Gacy run around dressed as a clown when he was...
Yes, he worked as a clown, yeah.
He worked as a clown when he was killing people. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he was dressed as a clown when he was doing the killing, but he was. Of course, he had a job as a clown.
Yes, we don't know that that wasn't true, so we can imagine it that way, I suppose. Yeah, I think that people will enjoy this because it's reasonably well-crafted. And I would say, in some cases, very well-crafted. It does play it safe, Simon. You're absolutely right about that. It would have been nice to see it take more risks. Like, it kind of had it in it. But at the same time, it does get some stuff so right that I'm perfectly entertained about it. I would put it up there with The Mist in the Stephen King movies. I think those two are fairly, the stories are completely different, but I think as far as the craft of the film, they're pretty uneven ground there. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the throwback. I think it really does bring you back to what you were scared of when you were a kid. I think that's also what people really like about this story, is remembering childhood, which a lot of adults do not. They don't remember what it was like to be afraid of nonsensical things like lepers going down the street, which is clearly ridiculous, or paintings coming alive, or, you know, something in the cellar, which, let's face it, probably, I don't know, has that ever really happened?
So wait, in the sequel, are the adults going to be hounded like by their mortgage or climate change
It's abuse of income inequality for Beverly, if I remember right. They all have their own adult things, but they also don't really remember, you know, sort of the promise that they made, and they have to be sort of reminded of that. I think that if I'm remembering the miniseries right, they have to sort of, they're not in contact with each other anymore. They don't really remember their own childhood anymore, which of course is, that's what happens to adults.
Yeah, not everybody actually returns. There's one person who doesn't return, one character.
That's a scene I always will remember too.
Yeah, that's true. It was a standout scene in the miniseries. Anyway, movie's called It. I think we've talked about it enough. So yeah, I mean, part two, this movie's going to make so much fucking money. So it's part two. I'm sure it's going to be coming down the pike in a couple of years.
Oh my God. I got into a huge fight with someone who said I was crazy because I said that this movie is going to make so much money. It's going to break box office records. It's going to be one of the highest grossing movies of the year, and it's going to continue on until October. And because there's not much competition, because it's a horror film, because it's going to just make gangbusters. And this guy said I was crazy.
And don't be surprised, by the way, if they make more than two movies out of this shit.
Like, they're not going to make more than two out of this. There's no way they can pull it off.
No, someone's going to write a fucking Origins of Pennywise movie, I guarantee you. I guarantee it.
You might be right about that. Okay, that I can see.
Come on, we got an Origins of fucking Ouija movie, all right?
Yeah, we're going to get actually, an Origins of Simon's kind movie. Of right, because you got to remember, something bad happens in a town every 27 years. And when he's flicking through the book in the library, that's like 27 different movies that you could make.
Oh my God.
That's right. 300,000 years of human history divided by 27, that's how many It sequels you're going to get.
You know what? The caveman version of It would be awesome. Come on.
Your grandchildren are going to be recording a podcast on the 27th sequel in about like 50 years from now.
True. It's never going to stop.
It's never going to end. And that is the biggest fear, negativity. Guys. That is my biggest fear. My biggest fear is being trapped in a podcast forever and ever and ever talking about the worst movie ever made.
I don't know. What's the worst movie ever made? I think you could talk about the worst movie for quite a while. You'll like complaining.
You'll float on the feed forever. Anyway, thank y'all for listening. We will be back next week. I'm sure we're going to talk about Mother, which is out next week, if I understand correctly, if the hilarious trailer I saw is accurate. And I'm sure that's coming up. I'm sure we're going to discuss some other TIFF stuff. And do check out sordidcinema.com. And I should just plug one last time, if you're a Twin Peaks fan, do check out the other podcast I do, which is The Lodgers with Kate Renabom. Our podcast on the finale is going to be late. It'll be out sometime next week. It's going to be big, so enjoy that. And you can find me on Twitter at HollowMind, spelled like it sounds, and follow us, Goomba Stomp, on Twitter at Goomba Stomp Mag, as well as at Sordid Cinema for the film stuff. And that's about it. Thank you all so much for listening.